I'm Vernon Trollinger for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for Lori Vollmer, OD, MS, FAAO, Associate Professor of Optometry and Director of Residency Programs at Nova Southeastern University.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania. I lived there until I was about 15 years old, and then we moved to Sarasota, Florida. And so I switched sort of in the middle of high school. So between my sophomore and junior year, I moved from Pennsylvania to Florida and finished high school down in Florida.
What did your parents do?
My father was a stockbroker, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom when I was growing up. Currently, they both work in sales, and I have two younger brothers and one older sister. And one brother lives in Miami, one lives in California, and my other sister lives here in Florida.
So why did your family move to Florida?
Yeah, it was not my favorite year to move, right in the middle of high school. I think I was mad at my parents for a year. But he got a job offer as a broker to move to a different firm, and so we all moved down here.
How did you become an ophthalmic technician? And why did you go on to become an optometrist?
When I graduated from the University of South Florida, and I had a degree in biology, but I didn't really have any specific plans on what I was going to do with the degree, which I'm not even sure how I chose it. I think it was all just destiny. So when I graduated from college, just life circumstances at the time, I really couldn't continue on in school, so I had to get a job. So I just happened to get a job working for an ophthalmologist, just making like $6.50 an hour or some tiny little job, knowing nothing about the eye at all, and just got trained and became, their chief technician and ended up working for a glaucoma practice, for a glaucoma surgeon, and then eventually moved to work for a pediatric ophthalmologist that was kind of really my primary mentor, where he gave me a lot of really good training. Sent me to meetings and conferences to get really well trained. And then at a certain point, that site was an externship site for fourth-year students. And it was a pediatric site, but he also had general ophthalmology and neuro. And so they would come for their pediatric rotation, and I had to train them. So I had to train the fourth-year students what to do, and then they would leave and new students wouldn't come through. And then after training fourth-year students time after time and talking to them about optometry, I realized, this is kind of silly. I should just go back to school. I have a biology degree, and I'm sort of, and the ophthalmologist at the time, it was Dr. Gugino, and he was really helpful in helping me get everything done to get into school, and was really supportive, and that was it. And it was kind of interesting. So I knew that I liked the field, and that I wasn't really going to leave it. I really enjoyed it, but that I wasn't really working to my potential that I could as a COT. It was not an easy path because it took me a couple of years to get, all the additional separate requirements and to take my entrance exams and everything. So I was a bit of a non-traditional student, about 30 when I started optometry school. It was pretty exciting and kind of a second career. So I enjoyed that.
Why ocular disease?
I'm not really sure, except for I know that when I was working as a technician, I was always really interested in asking how did this happen and why is this happening and really trying to understand it. When I was a student, I just sort of gravitated toward that topic. And then when I was a second year student, I started to tutor in ocular disease. And then third year, fourth year, I tutored. Then when I became a resident, the dean still had me come back to tutor. So I ended up tutoring disease for several years. So it was just an area that I was really interested in. And because I worked for a pediatric ophthalmologist before I went to school, thought I was going to do pediatrics. And it's a little secret that I actually do know how to do peds. I don't tell people that. So then that was basically how I came into that. And I mean, I thought that I was going to go into pediatric optometry, but I just gravitated towards disease when I got into school. So ever since then, been in that area. And then, of course, nutrition has kind of developed on the side as well.
I have read that you only have animal children.
Yes, I only have animal children.
So what sort of menagerie do you have?
Oh boy, it's kind of interesting right now. So we have quite an interesting ecosystem going on here. Either everybody here is either trying to kill or eat the other one. So, I have a dog that's a miniature pincher. I have two cats. I have a bearded dragon. I have a leopard gecko. I have two ball pythons, and I have two parakeets. So yes, we only take things out to play one at a time. Yeah.
So the pythons are after the geckos and the bearded dragon.
Yeah, and the cat's after everything, and then the
Everything.
dog's after the cat, and yeah, it's a mayhem. Yeah.
Never a dull moment.
Now, but my husband and I are both animal enthusiasts, so we have similar. We both really enjoy animals, so it's a common interest. So we work together to keep the tribe in check.
So when did you start going beyond the dogs and cats and things? When
And
did you start keeping?
the dog is actually my last acquisition. I had cats when I met my husband. But then he was sort of a reptile lover, and he sort of got me hooked into the reptiles. And then when I got the bearded dragon, he sort of has a following. He has his own Instagram page, so he's kind of famous. And then they've sort of he got we got one snake, and then they just sort of, what can I say? I mean, my office is like a reptile museum, so.
And I've heard you like to travel, so how do you choose your travel destinations?
Most of the time they involve lecturing. So my husband and I both, work in optometry and are professors. And he speaks nationally and internationally. And they're usually really interested in Joe, and I just sort of tang along. And then like, oh, if she also is an eye doctor, maybe she can lecture too. So, but we've gotten some really good lectures on it. So we've been to Australia 5 times to lecture, and New Zealand twice to lecture, and a lot of very interesting, very fun places to lecture. So a lot of them do rotate around. We're going to go for work, and so we just tack on some extra time. But we do occasionally just literally randomly just pick a place, Prague, or we went to Budapest, and just randomly picked places. So we're going to be lecturing in Colombia coming up. So we just like to travel while we are kind of young enough to do it and healthy enough to do excursions and have fun and do things. So we decided when we get older, we'll sit around and just look at each other. But right now we will have fun and travel and try to do as much as we can. So,
Since you like traveling, what's your favorite city?
it's a good question. I really liked Prague from the historical perspective. It's beautiful, has a lot of history. And we really enjoyed being there. And it was kind of interesting because when we first got to Prague, it was really late at night, and there was a lot of graffiti, and we were kind of associate that in the States with maybe not a great neighborhood. And so when we got to where they dropped us off to the hotel, it was dark and everything was a little, we were a little nervous. We weren't really in the best neighborhood. And we were walking down on these little dark alleys trying to figure out where we were. And then all of a sudden we walked out and we're in the middle of the square, and it was gorgeous, and we got it. But it was just, we were almost about ready to turn around and leave, but we kind of figured that out. So that was the most beautiful. But I would say our happy place is probably the Daintree Rainforest in Australia, which we've been to several times now. When we go lecture, we go all the way up north to the rainforest area and the barrier reef, and we actually stayed in a wildlife park up there before. They usually stay in huts that are up in the rainforest, and it's, no lights, no Wi-Fi, no nothing, and it's amazing. So we love it there.
Now, why did you pursue a master's in nutrition?
Well, I've always actually been really interested in the area. Before I was an optometrist, I was actually a personal trainer. And it's something that really not that many people know about, but I worked as an ophthalmic technician, and also in addition, I was a personal trainer. And used to train bodybuilders and have done a fitness competition before. And nutrition really kind of goes hand in hand with fitness. And so when I got into optometry school, obviously my focus was all on, optometry and eye care disease and all the things I had to do. And now I am finding that when I see patients, A lot of their problems have to do with just poor life choices, not adequate nutrition, and just certain risk factors. And a lot of the things about their overall health, which affect their eyes, really come back to just general health. And having been a former coach of sorts, I kind of started to merge my old life with my new life, I guess, is the best way to word it. So, and I wanted to have, there's a lot of people that claim to be experts in nutrition, and it's an area that can sometimes be contentious because everybody believes that their thought process is the best thought process. So I really wanted to, I want to go back and do this sort of by the books. So I do counsel my patients, but so I wanted to go back and get the master's degree because I wanted to get an additional degree, and I'm at school and I'm able to do it. And I wanted an area where I'm interested in, if I'm going to go back to school. So NOVA had a really great program for me to do, and it made it convenient. And so once I completed that, it's allowed me to kind of start some research in nutrition for my graduation, for my thesis. And so I'm going to probably continue to do a little bit of research in that area because it's more interesting to me. And eventually pursuing actual licensure as a dietitian, so that I can have sort of a practice inside of a practice where I can legitimately counsel, follow, and counsel patients with disease, specifically diabetes, hypertension, conditions where they need to lose weight, like idiopathic intracranial hypertension, things like that, where they need to lose weight, and legitimately follow them in the above the board way. And so I want to do everything sort of by the books, and possibly get into a little bit more research. And I have some colleagues coming behind me. They're doing a similar thing. So at some point, we might be able to really get a really interesting clinical practice together like this.
On that note, what's your guilty pleasure food?
Oh, my personal trainer is well aware of the fact that it's peanut butter. So when there's stress involved, it's usually a jar of peanut butter and a spoon, and that's bad. No, but chocolate and peanut butter, those are two of the things that I really kind of like to sort of, if I'm binging, I'll binge on. But yeah, I like, that's my midnight food where no one's looking. But for the most part, I'm a pretty decent eater. But yeah, that's what my favorite is.
What's it like to be on faculty at the same school with your spouse, whose name is Joe Soka?
Yeah, Joe and I actually are about three offices down from each other. And I ironically actually don't really see him that much because he works at the main school and runs the glaucoma service. And I work at the downtown clinic where we see more indigent patients that have generalized disease. So I don't see him clinically almost ever. So we never work together clinically. And usually for both in our office at the same time, he usually just screams down the hall at me if he needs me. So it's very, very professional, but for the most part, we don't have any issues or concerns working together. We try not to bring it home and discuss it, but we actually don't see each other that much at work. People ask me that a lot, but not too much. So it's pretty easy, and it's fun when we lecture together, because a lot of times people don't even know we're married, and we'll lecture for 2, 3, 4 hours, and they have no concept we're even married. So that's kind of fun.
Well, at the end of the day, do you talk shop, as it were, or do you consult each other on interesting cases? Or
sometimes, yes. You know, he's still there are very few people that are as accomplished as Joe in the profession. So, yes, I do consult with him often on things that I need. And though we are both in disease, we have different areas of interest. There are things that I do that he does not do and vice versa. So even though we both have an interest in ocular disease, we have different roles in the profession. So we don't often overlap in that regard. So yeah, again, it's not healthy to sit around at home and complain about this or that. So talk about people at work. So we try not to do that when possible. It is, of course, there's days, but but for the most part, yeah, it's pretty easy.
What's something about optometry you'd like to change?
Well, being that I am working in academia, we do, of course, take insurances and everything, but I know a lot of people have a lot of difficulty and complications with insurances and billing insurances. But what I have found is a little bit of frustration with the debt to income right now. And what we're seeing from our side in academia is a little bit of difficulty with getting people motivated into the profession based on how much money they're going to make when they get out versus the debt it takes to get through the program. It's sort of reaching sort of a critical debt to income, you know, point, breaking point. There's only so much debt a person can go into to make it worthwhile when you make X when you come out the other side. And I don't really know what the solution is to that. It's the same thing with residencies. You know, the salaries for the residencies remain pretty low and they have a lot of debt. And it's just not, you know, people think I have to start working and start making money so that I can pay back these loans. I really don't have the luxury of an additional year to make $36,000. So I like to see salaries for residency programs increase significantly so that it's a more desirable possibility for people who are coming out of optometry school.
Do you have any regrets?
No, I don't have any regrets. Even bad decisions, I don't regret. bad decisions, I have made many, still develop you and get you to where you need to be. You know, when you think about if things in your past that you've done, even though you regret, had you not done them, you wouldn't be where you are. And optometry certainly is that case for me. I don't think I would be an optometry had it not been some of the things I've been through in the past. So, I had no intention of meeting a husband at optometry school, but, you know, so sometimes life has its own path. Again, like I said, if I was weaved in destiny, I have no idea why I chose a biology in college. I'm the only person in my family in healthcare. No one is in the medical sciences, so I've always been a black sheep. coming into optometry school was a big change in my life because I was already almost 30 years old. And then getting the master's is going to be where that's going to take me. I don't know, but I'm 50 years old. I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to be when I grow up. So I kind of like it that way. I don't like to think that I'm ever done with anything. So I'm always the kind of person always looking for the next thing to sort of do. And that makes me feel, you know, alive and invigorated. Sometimes those things work and sometimes those things fail, but they always have a purpose. So I don't have any regrets.
Okay. Not necessarily having to do with bad decisions or mm-hmm. regrets. This is the last question. We inflict this one on everybody.
Oh, God. Okay.
What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Oh, that I can say on a professional interview. Okay. I don't know. Maybe, you know, at a later age, I decided to take up martial arts and was doing board breaking and all sorts of crazy things. And I was the only female in the whole class and sparring with men that were half my age. And that was a little crazy. But I actually have a first degree brown belt in jujitsu.
Oh.
And I did taekwondo first, but then I switched over to where I did a lot of board breaking. I switched over to jujitsu, which is a lot of grappling and judo throws. And, so it was interesting because I was the only female in the class. And so that was sort of odd, but I've never really been bothered by that. I remember when I was in grade school, I was the only girl on an all boys basketball team. So I've always been comfortable amongst male, colleagues in sports. I'm one of those girls that's comfortable, perfectly comfortable with walking into the free weight room in the gym right in the middle of a sea of men and have no concerns. So, that doesn't bother me at all. So. Yeah. So I think that was at an older age as a female in a whole class of men, that was a little unusual, but I don't know about crazy, but unusual. So,
well, like I say, crazy can be something that's also out of character.
Maybe something really silly I did when I was in college is I just spontaneously entered a bikini contest out of nowhere. Oh my goodness. That was actually kind of crazy. It was a Hawaiian tropics bikini contest. So that was a little crazy.
Do you remember why you did it? Or was it just because?
No, it's crazy 20s. When you're in your crazy 20s, you do things like that. It was around the time I was doing fitness competitions.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so. That was definitely out of character. Anybody who knows me right now would definitely say that was weird for you to do that.
Well, that's all the questions I have for you, Lori. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling and chatting. I appreciate it. It was fun. It was interesting.